නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta in this section these days, and Satipatthana Sutta is quite important because we as practitioners, it gives us a lot of guidance, and especially for mindfulness practice, and it is therefore well respected and well accepted as the one of the most important and the well resourceful sutta available in the Majjhima Nikaya as well as in the Digha Nikaya. Now, as we can see from the diagram, it has mainly four sections: Kayanupassana, that is to deal with the body as a way of establishing mindfulness and improving mindfulness, and then using Vedana, the feelings, to establish mindfulness and to develop various insights, and then to use the mind states, to establish mindfulness as well as to develop insight, wisdom, and then Dhammanupassana, the mindfulness on various phenomena, so that we can further improve mindfulness, clear comprehension, wisdom, and even the teaching of the Paticchasamuppada, the dependent origination. Now, currently we are dealing in the Dhammanupassana section, and we already discussed Nivarana, that is the hindrances, how one can use hindrances to develop mindfulness as well as to develop insights. And then we have moved to aggregates, Khanda, where our whole experience is divided into five groups. And by properly understanding these five groups, one can eliminate various defilements, and therefore profound understanding of these aggregates become one of the key teaching of the Buddha. And now we today going to discuss this next section, that is the Ayatana. So those are the sense bases. Now, when it comes to sense bases, we need to understand, now even though we call as I, me, or you, he, she, so all these so-called person, individual, actually communicate with the outside world using various senses. So if we start with eyes, so we see various objects, sights using eyes, and then using ears we hear various sounds. Using the nose we sense various smells, odors, and then using the tongue we experience various tastes, and then using the body we experience various tangibles, tactile sensations, contact, and then using the mind we are experiencing various mental objects. So therefore, if we consider our whole experience, we can say it's a combination of all these experiences, but anyway one at a time. But due to the rapid succession of the mind, extreme rapidity in the mind, so we can't perceive some sort of a serial kind of a situation, kind of a one after the other situation, but rather we presume that everything happens together. While looking at something, we still can hear. At the same time, probably we can smell. Again, we can sense other senses as well because of this rapidity. But in real terms, when we are seeing, we can't hear, we can't feel the taste, we can't feel the contact. But only the seeing happens. Similarly, when we hear something, we can't see, we can't smell, we can't taste. Only the hearing happens. So likewise, this senses comes to the front and they become the dominant factor, while the others are in the background. But because of the rapidity of the mind, we can't perceive that sort of a phenomena. Rather, we feel that everything happens at the same time. It's very much like analogy to the present day computers, where the processor speed is very high and time sharing is happened internally within the processor architecture, so that various programs are running concurrently and each program is given some processor resource. Accordingly, it seems like, or the user feels like, many programs, applications are running at the same time. But if the machine or the laptop computer only has a single processor, and then the time sharing is the one taking care of this kind of a resource allocation. Similarly, in the mind, we have a kind of a series sort of situation where everything happens one after the other, but because of the rapidity, so we feel like we can see, we can hear, we can smell, we can taste, we can sense, and even we can know various thoughts at the same time. Now, there's a beautiful sutta coming in the Indriya Samyutta, where is one prominent Brahmin. He's a scholar and he come and ask a question from the Buddha, and he's asking that when we consider the eyes, it can only see various sights, but it can't hear sounds, it can't taste various, it can't sense various tastes, it can't sense any kind of a tangible, it can only see sights. Similarly, when we consider ears, it can only sense or it can only hear sounds, but it can't see various sights, it can't sense any kind of a kind of a smell, taste, or kind of a contact. Similarly, when we consider the tongue, it can only feel the taste, but it can't feel the sights, sounds, smells, and the other ones. When we consider the body, it can only feel the tactile sensations, tangibles, but it can't see, it can't hear, it can't smell. Similarly, it can't recognize the taste, but it can only recognize various tangibles. So this Brahmin venerable, sorry, this Brahmin called Unnaba Brahmana, so he asked from the Buddha, now there are some specific domains that these faculties are working on. Eye sound, sights, ears are on the sounds, nose on the smells, tongue on the taste, and the body on the tactile sensation. So they are not mixing up together. Now they know their domain properly, and they are only working on that limited domain. They are not mixing. So who is the one ultimately going to consume all these objects or all these arambana that these senses are admitting? So this is the question that he is asking from the Buddha. Because when we see something, it does not remain in the eyes. Once we close the eyes, the function of the eyes are gone, finished. Similarly, once we hear a sound, once it is finished or end, it has gone. Similarly, if we feel kind of a odor, after a while it has gone. When we even feel a taste, assume that we wash our mouth, then all the tastes are gone. It doesn't remain in the tongue. So then this Brahmin asks, who is the one going to consume? Who is the one going to memorize? Who is the one maintaining some sort of a storage? So there the Buddha mentioned that is the mana, that is the mind ultimately going to consume everything. Whatever the sights that we see from the eyes are ultimately being sort of analyzed, recognized, accordingly memorized by the mind. Whatever the sounds that we hear through our ears does not remain at the ears, but it is being consumed, recognized, memorized by the mind. Similarly for the other faculties. So mind becomes fairly the governing body of all these sensory perceptions. Therefore, mind plays a vital role in this whole recognition. Even though the senses are important, ultimately mind is the one doing the complete interpretation. And then there's another beautiful question that this Brahmin asks, because we can understand that from the childhood till our death, so we are constantly using these senses in order to get so many objects. From the beginning of our life, we see various things. Accordingly, mind may store various things. Mind may take various signs. It is being stored and some may be forgotten. Similarly, using ears that we are listening, hearing many things. And ultimately, those are going to be stored to some extent. Similarly, through the nose, tongue, body, that we perceive a lot of objects, sensory objects, and it being stored to some extent at the mind. So we can understand, compared to a little child, an adult mind is fairly corrupted in a way, polluted, because so much of information being stored. And what is being stored is mostly the most, say, vulnerable parts. Vulnerable in the sense which are the ones mostly polluting the mind. The mind is storing the ones, it is not only the useful stuff, but even quite unnecessary stuff, harmful stuffs being stored. Now, therefore, this Brahmin asks, so what is the refuge for such a mind? Then Buddha gives a very interesting answer, telling mindfulness is the refuge for such a mind. Manasako brahmana sati patisaranaanti. For such a mind, which is already polluted, already corrupted, the mindfulness is the refuge. Now, in this context, we can understand even though senses are working, so mind plays a vital role, and what we perceive is therefore fairly colored by the influence coming from our past experience. Say, for example, you have a kind of a relationship with someone and assume that the relationship has broken. After a couple of years, suppose this person being accidentally met while on the road or wherever it is. Now, immediately, once you see this person and you recognize, and all those past memories come to the front and color your experience, and you may project a lot of preconceived ideas onto the experience. How he or she has behaved, how he or she has sort of, say, looked down you, or what are the sort of difficult times you had, and what is the kind of agony that you went through. So likewise, so many things were there, and you have fairly accumulated a lot of things, added a lot of things, constructed a lot of things, and at the very moment that you see this person, and all those preconceived ideas come into the front, and we are projecting that to the present experience. So we can understand, therefore, even though we see, it is not a kind of a pure sight that we are seeing. There's a fair amount of projected information, projected bias information is there in the experience. Similarly, when we hear something, it is not a pure sound that we are listening. We are adding so much of our own stuff to that listening. Similarly, when we are smelling, say, incense or any kind of a smell, odor, so there are also the same situation. We are projecting so much of preconceived ideas, our own bias or likes and dislikes into the picture. When we are tasting something, similarly, we are projecting our own stuff to the picture. And when we are going through some sort of a contact through the body, same situation. And even when the mind itself is projecting, or rather experiencing, some mental object, so that also being constructed, further interpreted, further colored by our own preconceived ideas. Now, therefore, the whole experience becomes quite complicated. It's very difficult to analyze what is my own addition, construction, projection, and what is the pure experience. So therefore, we can say, when we analyze an experience, so it has something, the pure part coming from the object, that we can say as the objective influence, And at the same time, there is a significant part that we are projecting onto the experience that is coming from our preconceived ideas that we can say as the subjective influence. So therefore, the experience we can say has two components, the objective influence as well as the subjective influence. Now, if one is capable of understanding this situation, then we can actually entangle the whole picture rather than becoming a victim of this, particularly in the subjective experience, subjective influence. The subjective influence is the one actually really coloring the whole experience, really conditioning the whole experience so that we can't see the real picture. We can't see the reality. Say, for example, we constantly have an idea that things are sort of permanent. It lasts for a long time. So whenever we perceive something, we are looking at it, looking or experiencing it with the perception of permanence. Similarly, we expect some satisfaction, some happiness from the sensory impingements, sensory experience, and similarly, therefore, constant expectation coming as a kind of this experience may give me happiness using these sights, sounds, smells, taste, tangibles, I may get happiness. So that is a kind of a constant expectation we are always adding to the picture. And we feel that we also have kind of a governability, kind of a control to this experience. Therefore, we expect some kind of a control that things are under my control, and therefore I can manage it, I can handle it, I can manipulate it. So this kind of a projection is also there. And also, we all always feel that I am experiencing, I am the one listening, I am the one seeing, I am the one tasting, I am the one smelling, I am the one feeling, I am the one thinking. So we are adding even a person, an individual, so-called I, into the picture. Now the whole experience become further complicated. So there is an experiencer. So there is a person who is experiencing. That is the experiencer. Now, experiencer is experiencing something outside. So this is the typical grammar that we are learning. Now, from our childhood, we are going to the college and we are learning according to this context. There is an experiencer, and that experiencer is experiencing something external. So constantly our minds are being conditioned, colored, thinking that there is a person, there is an experiencer, there is I. Assume that how many times that we have gone through this. From our childhood, we are teaching this to our children, and we ourselves have done that. And therefore, ultimately, we can't understand the true picture, and you always think, okay, I am the one perceiving, I am the one listening, I am the one seeing, I am the one experiencing. There is I, there is a person internally, there is a person inside, there is a soul inside. So ultimately, we are trapped in this soul view, self view, personality view, because from our this all typical this conventional world, we are sort of reinforcing this self view, we are reinforcing this personality view. Now, how to overcome this? How to unentangle this? How to remove this confusion, complication? So that is where the meditation, mindfulness meditation is quite important, and especially the Vipassana helps us to unentangle this problem. Now, if one is capable of keeping one's attention constantly on the senses, then when the eyes are in operation, we can recognize, at least to some extent, how this recognition happens. How eyes have recognized kind of a sign, kind of an object, a sight. And then what is our addition? Because of this experience, what are the new defilements being arisen in our mind? How I get entangled in the picture? How I get sort of, assume that there was no any kind of a defilement in the mind. Mind was so peaceful. calm, but because of this sight, now immediately there's a kind of a attachment arise in the mind. Now mind become again shackled, mind gotten shackled in the experience, shackled in that sight. Similarly, assume that the mind was quite calm, clear, unattached, but we have listened to some song. It's a very beautiful song. So immediately mind get attached to that song. So there's a kind of an attachment arising in the mind. There's a kind of a inclination arising in the mind. Kind of a entanglement, shackling happens in the mind. Similarly, assume there is a very beautiful smell, fragrance, and immediately we attach to it. So the mind go and immediately trying to hold it, trying to grasp it. So we can see immediately when the sensory experience happen, so mind not only adds its own sort of biases, likes and dislikes, projections, but it also get shackled in the experience. It become hooked up with the experience. So this is the point that Buddha highlights in this Ayatana Pabba, where Buddha asks us to recognize the operation of various sense bases and the corresponding objects. And at the same time, he asks us to see the shackling part, the defilement or the engagement, the attachment happens after this impingement. So therefore Buddha mentions, Chakkuncha pajanati, rupecha pajanati, yancha tadubhayam padiccha uppajjati sanyojanam tancha pajanati. Now one has to recognize the operation of the eye, similarly the sight, and once it comes in contact, what is the arisen defilement? What is the arisen sanyojana, fetter? So that also has to be recognized. Similarly, one has to recognize or be alert on the ears whenever a sound impinge, and what is the experience, how the mind contribute, and importantly, what is the attachment arisen in the mind, how mind get engaged in the experience, how again mind go and shifted to that sound. We have lost the present moment. We are now involved. The mind is involved. Mind being shackled. So Buddha asks us to see this shackling nature, the attaching nature, the entanglement, engagement, bondage happens in the mind. Similarly, Buddha mentions, say one has to know the nose and the smells. And once they comes together, what is the newly generated defilement, newly generated attachment, bondage, grasping in the mind? Similarly, one needs to be alert on the tongue, and whenever we are experiencing some taste, how the mind reacts, what is the attachment arising in the mind, how you feel with it, how the shackling happens in the mind. And similarly, when you are going through some sort of a bodily experience, say experiencing some sort of a contact, at the same time there could be a possibility of arising an attachment, asking some more, I want it more, I want to have it, I want to own it, possess it, and I want to keep it for a long time, I want to experience it more and more, or even I want to get rid of it quickly. Assume that you are experiencing some pain. So immediately, I want to get rid of it. So there are so many defilements, subtle defilements are being generated. And more our mindfulness is improved, sharp, then we can recognize these defilements. Similarly, when the mind itself is recognizing some mental object, there could be a possibility of arising of a fetter. So this fetter has to be recognized. At the same time, Buddha mentioned, once this previously the mind was clean, clear, and very simple, unattached, and spacious, but now because of this sense impingement, there's a newly generated defilement, newly generated fetter. So this fetter has to be recognized. So the arising part of this fetter has to be recognized. Yatacha anuppannassa sanyojanassa upado hoti tancha pajanati. Now you are recognizing now the arising of the fetter. It was not there. Mind was clean. Mind was with a very spacious, calm, equanimous mood. But now, because of the impingement of this eye with a sight, now you can recognize, okay, there is a fetter arising, there is a defilement arising, there is a desire arising in the mind. Now you are recognizing very honestly, very humbly, you are recognizing the arising of this defilement, arising of this desire. And assume that you are able to look at it properly. So you have established mindfulness, you are able to step back and watch it. Now you are not a victim of this experience. You are not sort of driven by the experience, but now you have recognized, okay, there is a defilement arising. So there the eye and the sights are being sort of in contact, but now there is a defilement arising in the mind. Now so you are vigilant about that defilement, you are aware of that defilement. You are able to step back and watch that defilement. As a result, what happens? Now you are not driven by that defilement. You are no more a victim of that defilement. Rather, you are able to recognize that defilement as it is. Now, there is no way for that defilement to further grow because of your this wise attention, because of this clear recognition, clear knowing. There is no way that defilement can further improve or grow. As a result, now it starts to fade away. So therefore, that fading away part also Buddha asks us to look at. Yathacha uppannassa sanyojanassa pahanang hoti tancha pajanati. So that arisen fetter is now decreasing. It is now started to fade away. It starts to melt. So that also you start to see. You are fully alert, fully aware, fully diligent at the sense, and then the defilement also recognized, mindfulness has established, you have disengaged from the process, from the experience, and you are mindfully watching what's really going on. As a result, the defilement starts to fade away. And then there's a beautiful thing happens. Since you have wisely paid attention, since you have properly analyzed it or properly applied mindfulness into the picture, now the defilement has faded away, and for some time now it will not arise in the future. Tancha yathacha pahinasa sanyojanasa ayating anuppado hoti tancha pajanati. So therefore Buddha mentions, now that already sort of faded defilement, disappeared defilement, will not arise for a while. Now you are again back to the equanimity. Again the mind has calmed down. Again the mind has become peaceful. Again the mind becomes spacious. And you appreciate that. You appreciate that peacefulness, calmness. And we are not sort of complaining that I feel bored, I feel monotony. Because we know there was a burning defilement. I properly addressed it, properly become mindful on it, and as a result it has faded away, it has disappeared. Now again the mind is back to normal, mind is again back in the baseline, mind again in the home stage, home situation. So mind is not agitated. So this has to be recognized. This also has to be recognized, has to be properly given value. Otherwise what happens is, we feel like bored, there is nothing to agitate. Mind is in a very calm, quiet state. And if we look at it in a negative manner, thinking that I feel bored, I feel monotony, or I feel drowsy. So if we feel like that, then we are inviting for defilements. But rather, we should recognize, we should give value to this calmness, to this peacefulness, unagitated state of the mind. So this is something also very important. And then there's a beautiful conversation has happened between Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Kottita, and it is called Kottita Sutta in the Salayatana Sangyutta. There's a beautiful question asked by the Venerable Kottita from Venerable Sariputta. He asks, for the eye, is the sight a fetter, or the other way around? For the sight, is the eye become the fetter? Then similarly he asks, and actually then the Venerable Sariputta say no. Then he asks, for the sound, is the ear becomes the fetter, or for the ear, is the sound becomes the fetter? Then Venerable Sariputta, for both questions he say no. Similarly he asks, for the nose, is the odor becomes the fetter, or for the odor, the nose become the fetter? And when will Sariputta say no? Similarly he asks, for the tongue, is the taste become the fetter, or for the taste, is the tongue become the fetter? And when will Sariputta say no? And for the body, is the tangible become the fetter, or for the tangible, is the body become the fetter? And when will Sariputta say no? Similarly for the mind, is the mental object become the fetter, or for the mental object, the mind become the fetter? And Venerable Sariputta say no. And Venerable Mahakottita, he too become an arahant, being an arahant, actually asking this question for our own understanding. Not that he doesn't know, he may know very well, but for the later generations to understand the Dhamma, so he's asking these questions. Then he is asking, please Bhante, could you give an example to understand this sort of perplexity? And then Venerable Sariputta gives a very beautiful and easy to understand example. And he says, now assume there is a white bull and a black bull, and they being tied up using a rope. Now whenever white bull wants to go to a one direction, since he is being bound to the black bull also has to follow. Similarly, if the black bull is pulling to some other side, the white bull also has to follow. Then he is asking from Venerable Mahakottita, so is the black bull the fetter for, or the bondage for white bull, or is the white bull a fetter, a bondage for the black bull? And then Venerable Mahakottita say, no, it is the bondage, it is the rope that is binding both together. So that is the fetter, that is the bondage. And similarly Venerable Sariputta says, it is not that sight becomes the fetter for eyes, or the eyes become the fetter for sight. Rather, there is a bondage between these two. There is a chandaraga, there is a lust, desire arising because of the impingement, and that is the fetter, that is the defilement, that is the cause. So it's a very beautiful analogy that Venerable Sariputta is showing us. So therefore we don't need to remove all the sights, we don't need to ask all the beautiful women to go away so that we can maintain a calm mind. We don't need to ask all the handsome men to go away just we can maintain a calm mind. They may remain as it is, but we have to remove the fetter. We have to recognize the fetter. We need to recognize the defilement. And we can't simply ask everyone to switch off their radios, switch off their TVs, switch off their loudspeakers, musical centers. We can't ask like that. Rather, we need to recognize how our mind reacts. So what are the defilements arising in the mind? So that is the sort of the point. And similarly, we can't expect others to say wear well or behave well or say maintain proper demeanor so that we can maintain a calm mind, pure mind. Rather, we need to recognize how our mind reacts. So what are the defilements arising?
why these defilements are arising. How can I properly attend to them? So this is how the spiritual practices come into the picture. So therefore, there's a beautiful verse in the Nibbedika Sutta, Buddha mentioned, Tithanti Chitrani Tateva Loke Atitha Dhira Vinayanti Chanda. So the all these beautiful, wonderful, attractive things remain as it is. But the wise person tame his mind, tame the defilements. He remove or uproot the defilements, the desires. So that is the approach that Buddha is taking. Now, therefore we can understand, okay, in this Salayatana section, there's a fairly wide analysis on to these senses, and we always have to be vigilant on what we are experiencing. We have to keep a guard on our eyes, keep on guard on our ears, keep on guard on our nose, tongue, body and the mind. Then only we are able to recognize the clear picture, how we are adding so much things and how our mind becoming sort of desired or attached, shackled with the experience. And this is something that we need to again and again recognize. And Buddha says this whole thing happened as a cause and effect relationship. It is not that someone come into the picture and bound us, but rather it happens as a cause and effect relationship. He mentioned that when the eye and the form or the sight comes together, there's a chakku vinyana, that the knowing part of the form, knowing part of the sight, chakku vinyana, eye consciousness. And then when things are happening all together, this is a kind of a rapid action, and we perceive like everything has come together, and now we feel the contact. Now we feel, okay, eye and sight has impinged, has come together, has contact, and now I see something. I hear, in the sense, capital I, see something. And now there's a feeling arise, and assume that it's a wonderful feeling, assume that it's a happy feeling, pleasurable feeling, and immediately we feel craving for that. We want it. I am having a desire for that now. I attached it. And now the upadana, clinging, also happens. So once clinging happens, now we completely lose the present moment. When the clinging happens, immediately our mind has shifted, our consciousness has completely shifted to this new experience. Now we are reborn to this new experience. No more in the present moment, no more in that previous calmness, peacefulness, spaciousness. Rather, we have completely lost that world, but now we are in a new world. Assume that we are looking at a sort of a garden. So it's a very beautiful, say flowers are there, trees are there, extremely beautiful. So once we see it, even a picture, once we see it, immediately our mind generates a happy sensation, a pleasurable feeling, and we like it, we desire it, the tanha, craving, arise, and immediately we want it, we grasp it, we hold it, and assume that we are now closing our eyes, now we want to experience it fully. We are now in a different world. Now we are in a fantasy world. Now we are in a flower garden. Now our eyes are closed, we are experiencing, we are projecting so much things, we are visualizing so many things, we are even adding so many things, we are inviting our friends, we are inviting our loved ones, our fiancé, and we are in the garden, maybe singing, all so many things, lot of fantasies, all the fabrications. Now we are enjoying that new world, fantasy world. And after a while, assume that immediately someone come and bug us, come and knock us. Hey, what are you doing? And now only we come to the senses. Now that whole fantasy world collapse. whole imagined world collapse. Now the jara marana soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. All the sorrow, lamentation, that decaying, all that sorts of suffering happens because we lost it. We were in a really wonderful fantasy world, but it has gone. It has finished. It's simply a dream. It's a simple mind projection. So likewise, Buddha mentioned that all these experiences, what we are experiencing through our senses, can be analyzed according to this Patisamuppada principle, the cause and effect relationship, the principle. So that actually gives us another very profound perspective to the picture. Now everything happens because of various causes, and we are being very quickly driven by these various stages. Say I in contact with this sights, and the knowing part happens, and we feel that I am in contact with something, with the sight, and now it is generating a lot of pleasure, and I want it, I like it, so I desire it. Now I want it, I grasp it, I am trying to hold it, and now I am in a different world. Now I am enjoying it. I am in a different dream. So after a while, that dream also fades away, and due to some reason, it collapses. So the whole sort of imagination has gone. So therefore, we need to see, is it true for all the experiences? When we are seeing something using our eyes, is it true? When we are hearing something using our ears, is it happening to me? When I am smelling something, is it happening to me? When I am tasting say delicious food, is it happening to me? Am I closing my eyes? Say assume that you are experiencing a very delicious chocolate. So how are you experiencing it? So assume that you are taking a bite, close your eyes, and trying to taste each bit. And in order to have it fully, in order to experience it fully, you even close your eyes. You even close the door of your room, and you want to fully experience it. Fully in that tasty world, candor's world. In many different ways we can see. So we are unknowingly are subjected to this sort of a situation. We are victimized to this sort of situation. We are driven by this experience. So therefore Buddha say us that look at this picture. Look at how we are driven by this experience. How we are adding to this picture. And how we become entangled in the experience. How we are being shackled in the experience. And this is what Buddha asks us to look at. So with that kind of a mindfulness, with that kind of a satipatthana, therefore we can see, okay, this shackling become less and less. This entanglement become less and less. Our involvement become less and less. Our projections become less and less. Our coloring become less and less. Rather, we are able to look at something, hear something, taste something, smell something more objectively, without adding so much. So then only we get the proper picture, correct perspective. Otherwise, always the experience is fairly biased. Biased with our culture, biased with our tradition, biased with our upbringing, biased with our own likes and dislikes. So it's always a biased picture that we are getting, biased experience. But properly, if we apply mindfulness and look at it properly, then only we get an unbiased picture, the full picture, total picture. So this is why this ayatana, or the sense space, or the sense bases are quite important. The mindfulness appeared, or the put on these sense bases are quite important. And I like to conclude today's sermon with that note. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. So for all the participants, you may send your questions directly to me. The chat has only enabled for communication with the host and or raise your hand. If you are going to raise your hand to ask a question directly, please make sure that your username has actually your real name indicated, so we know that you are a real person and someone from Sethi.com. Okay, so Mahisha, you may please unmute and ask your question.
Today's session is really good and it's timely. Actually, it's like you said everything like to me. So I therefore thought of asking a question. Now you said about that when we grasp something from the outside while we are being try to mindful during the day, but if, for example, if I say, okay, I'm trying to, you know, making something in the kitchen, and then someone comes and asks something, so most of the time, you know, I don't hear, but they repeat because they know that I don't hear, and then when they repeat, but still if I don't want to hear to it, then I can feel, okay, kind of a bit of a annoying kind of, it's not really anger, but discomfort coming from somewhere to my mind, and I can see it's appearing, and it's burst. So at the point it's bursting, it's come saying, sometimes I use my posture to show that I don't want to talk, or I just say shh from my mouth, and then after doing that, then I feel, oh my God, have I done the right thing? How that person might be feeling now? Because they are my family members, so I feel like that. But now they understand, you know, I listen to Dhamma sessions through Zoom in different times, so they know that, so they walk away. Actually, while you were talking about, telling this when you were explaining it today, when it happened to me, so that's why I thought I would ask this. So then you said that when it's happening, like it's happened for a reason, or we call it hetu. So it's very hard to understand, like from outside, how things happening to disturb our concentration. And how can then, because my mind asked the question, okay, that person, you know, behave or ask something, and then how can, I mean, I can't control it, it's external, and how I can relate the reason for it, and then how can I console my mind, okay, that's something not you don't have, I mean, you don't have to disturb yourself, you keep on doing what you were doing. Why you're going to put your hand into that and then get burned and then thinking over it whether that person got hurt or discomfort, and then the mind is like going behind that person's thought, way of thinking, you know, thinking about the person's, how that person would think and whether that person is discomfort and all those things. So I think I have two questions in here. The first one, if I summarize what I have said so far, how we can identify a reason for a sudden pop-up of a situation which disturbs our mind, and the other thing is, once it's happened, how we can then get back to the mind and then completely erase what has happened.
Yeah,
thank you, Mante.
Yeah, so basically this is where actually the mindfulness is coming to the picture. So typically what happens is, if we are not mindful, immediately the experience itself start to drive us. So immediately we start to react. Assume that, as you take the example, say assume there's a family member just trying to bug you, just trying to disturb you. So immediate reaction is just you're shouting, okay, you go away. I'm listening to Dhamma, you go away. So likewise you are shouting. So that is the kind of a reaction we immediately, impulsively take in the mind.
Now, when we are mindful, so it is not that person become the problem, but rather we feel how the reaction, how our mind reacts impulsively. So this reaction is the one now we are trying to recognize. Now, more and more we become mindful, we are reducing this impulsive reaction. So rather we are able to apply brake. It's like a shock absorber. We are able to apply brake, shock absorbing, step back and watch the picture rather than immediate reaction. So therefore the answer for the fixation is the development of the mindfulness. More and more we develop mindfulness. So that is one benefit of the development of mindfulness, that we have now breaks. We are not simply being victim of the typical reactions, the impulsive reactions. And the other question that you ask, so how we can sort of analyze this situation. So once we step back and watch the mind, so that is where we are now very much like already built a dam onto this flow. Assume that this whole defilements arising in the mind is like a flood. Now once we apply mindfulness, it is like a blockage. It's like a dam that we immediately built. So now it can't go further, or it can't grow further. Now everything is under check. Now I have the proper perspective. Now mind is not in a reactive mode. But now things are under little control. So I know the picture. Okay, this person approached and he has told me something. And as a result, mind has a kind of a jerk, kind of a reactive, impulsive sort of situation. So I was able to check it. I was able to stop it. And now how to properly approach it. So in that situation, now we can say, okay, now we are further applying, say, insights. Say, how this has happened? Now you are sort of watching back. You are little sort of watching back how this whole thing erupted. How this whole thing burst. So if we properly see objectively, so it's a kind of a sight, it's a kind of a sound. And we perceive that using our ears, eyes, as a result the knowing has happened. And then kind of say the feeling, that feeling is not a tasty feeling, or that feeling is not a attractive feeling, rather a bitter feeling. So something that I don't like. So this is a kind of a repulsion towards that feeling. So I want to get rid of. So this is how, I mean, we are coming to the personality. Okay, I don't want it. I want to be secluded. I want to be alone. Leave me alone. So now the impulse happens. Now I am adding a person to the picture. He is there and I am here. He is trying to disturb me. I am here doing something important. So now there are various persons we are adding to the picture. How about simply taking this as kind of a experience which has completely happened between various senses, the eye and the sights, say ear and the sounds, and the knowing part also happen, and then the feelings also happen, and we are able to recognize the feeling, and we are not trying to put a person into the picture, draw a person into the picture, we are able to recognize the feeling. Okay, it's a painful feeling. So how can this painful feeling could be properly managed? How can I stop adding further feelings? So adding my own perceived ideas to the picture. So that way we are keeping the sort of the feeling at its more minimum level, or at its inception level, at its early stages. Otherwise what happens is, unknowingly we are complicating the picture, unknowingly we are adding so many parts, and we are get on to a story and we become emotional. And now the feeling become an emotion. On that situation we become, I mean, it's a bit difficult to handle. But once we apply mindfulness and we look at it, the whole picture, as we discussed last in the, according to the Hetupala, according to the cause and effect. So we can see the the whole picture become unentangled, the complication become dissolved, and we are able to see how it has happened, how so far the picture has grown. So this way
now we are approaching in a different way. We are now pay wise attention. Instead of taking the surface value, rather we go a little deeper and see the causes. So my mind has a kind of a perception, okay, during this time, no one should come and disturb me. No one should bother me. So I have a kind of a precondition in the mind. But others may not know about it. So they may come in as a usual manner, as a friendly manner. They may come and try to approach us. But we have our own restriction. We have imposed our own restriction. They should never come at this time. But the other person may not know about it. They may come and try to disturb or try to get some help. So now, when we are looking at in that manner, so there is no way to, become angry or sort of agitated. Rather, we sort of start to sympathize ourselves and even sympathize the others. So now we have the proper perspective, correct perspective, and the complication has dissolved, and our own additions, constructions are also being dissolved. So the whole kind of agitation starts to calm down. Now it has disappeared. Now again the mind is in the back to normal. So for example, I'll give you a simple example. While Venerable Sariputta was on the Pindapatha, one Brahmin wanted to test him, test his patience. So what really has happened was, he came by behind and slapped him, give him a knock. And Venerable Sariputta didn't even notice. He actually noticed, but he didn't even turn his mind, turn his head and look at him. But there were many other people waiting to offer dana to Venerable Sariputta. They become really upset. They become really agitated. They become really angry. And now they are following this man just to punish him. And the Venerable Sariputta is the one actually protected him. So likewise, I can give 1001 examples. So, this is an example comes in the books, but in our own lives also, we can probably find out some examples. I am not telling that every time we can manage like this, but at least when we are in the proper mood, when we are maintaining mindfulness, when we are able to approach properly, we are able to see the correct picture, then we are able to calm down ourselves. And rather than taking the revenge, rather than taking a sort of a reactively approach, we are able to step back and look at the picture. So therefore, these are the areas that we need to improve. So these are the mistakes we do, and at the same time, these are the areas that we can improve. And mindfulness and this kind of a proper analysis would be the answer.
Thank you, Mante. Can I ask another question, please? It's also related to this now. I'm quite happy with the cause and effect situation, because in Dhamma it said that when something happens, there is a cause for it. And then if we can eradicate the cause, there won't be a result out of it. So we have to look at the cause first. If we can, eliminate the cause, then there won't be an effect.
Yes.
So with that we heard it like not now, when before I started meditating, I heard that through Dhamma, and then so I had that in my mind, and always when something happens, I try to look at there are things that we have to, accept because there is a cause, and the cause created this effect. So then I had to figure out what's the cause. And then if I can do something about the cause, the effect will be different, or if it won't be there.
Yes.
So that's the system that I always look at. So when something happens, for example, if someone comes and approach and comes and tell about something, which out of ordinary and I never expected. So sometimes we lose, to answer back. So in that case, quickly I look at what was the reason, what was the cause for that person to, come up with an idea or a proposal or a subject like that. And then sometimes it's very hard to find what was the cause. And even though sometimes if you find the cause, it's very hard to control or eliminate the cause.
Mm-hmm. So actually,
so in that case, then we have to console our minds, saying, okay, I don't know the way of, you know, identifying the cause, or I don't have a ability to control the cause, so I have to defeat myself, or I have to accept it as it is, and then I tell to myself, oh, that's the natural law.
Yeah.
So nature does it. So we have to accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where I like to add here. So basically, the finding the cause outside is one approach, and finding the cause inside is another approach. Now here, even when others are sort of disturbing us, so why this mind become agitated? So what is the potential inside available here to get agitated? If there are no internal causes for the agitation, then whatever the agitation, whatever the disturbance the outside is projecting to us, but then internally we can't get agitated. So that is where the Buddha mentioned, puttassa loka dhammehi chittam yassana kampati. So, I mean, we may go through various ups and downs. We may go through various experiences. But the mind is unchanged. Mind doesn't lose its stability. Chittam yassa na kampati. The mind remained stable. It is not shocked. It is not disturbed. Mind has its stability. So this stability, this stillness is something that we are developing. It may not happen within a day or two. So as we are developing ourselves, so the causes for this agitation become being uprooted. So the causes are the self-view. So there's a view that I am here, I am a person, I am a person that has to be respected. I am a person that has to be properly given the sacred recognition. I am a person that they have to behave in a proper manner. So there is always a kind of a personality view underlying. So how about uprooting this personality view? So this is a very huge cause here. So we may be trying to find out causes outside in terms of the personality view. So, okay, I am here, he is there, and he has his own, say, upbringing, different sort of biases. So he is behaving like that. So still we are in the conventional level. But once we go to more insightful approach, so then we can even address that there's a person still within this whole experience. So I am adding a person to the experience. How about that? Then there's a vast amount of, purification actually happens, because we have taken a huge part of confusion. So the adding up of a person, imposing a personality, is one of the very big issue in this whole experience. Now more and more we develop insight, so that is where we are addressing. So there is always an experience, but there is no experiencer. There is no person who is experiencing. None other than the experience, there is no experiencer. So this is a very profound, very interesting insight. So if we are able to come to such a level, so then doesn't matter how much the others may disturb us, but there is no experiencer to get disturbed, to get agitated. So then, I mean, it's very much like, now say, I'll give you a simple example. Say there is a water bottle, and that water has some mud, and it has been sort of sedimented. And suppose that it was on a table, and someone accidentally knocks it. And now that sedimented mud, or that muddy particles, all comes to the surface, and everything become turbulent. Now it has become muddy water, because it already had the mud particles, impurities, and because of the shaking, the whole thing become muddy, whole thing become turbulent. Now suppose you completely purify that water, all the mud particles, all the impurities are taken out, And the same water bottle, now the all impurities are taken out, now kept on the table. Again, that same person assume come and knock on it. Still the shaking happens. Does the water become muddy?
No.
Because there are no impurities internally. So that is the approach that...
That's a good example.
Yeah, that is the approach that Buddha is taking. So when others come and knock with us, so why we become muddy? Why we become turbulent? Because internally we have some impurities. So that is the one making us turbulent. Making our mind crowded, corrupted, polluted. But if the main causes are completely uprooted, then doesn't matter the others, whatever others do. So we can maintain the stability of the mind. We can maintain the clarity of the mind. So that would be the long term and the complete answer that Buddha is taking. So that is where the meditation, this mindfulness practice, insight practice, all are actually directing us. Recognizing our own faults, recognizing our own additions, recognizing our own ignorance in a way. So avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnana paccaya namarupa. Till we have the personality view, there are always we do the constructions. There are always we add so many things. We are always coloring the picture. We are always coloring the experience. But there, if there is no ignorance, if we are able to properly establish mindfulness, if we are looking at things properly, not with the personality view, then there is no avijja. If there is no avijja, no construction, no fabrication. So mind remain calm. So that is, in the other terms, what Buddha mentioned is, ditte dittamattam bhavissati. The seen is just seen. There is no I who is seen. There is no seer. There is no experiencer. We can stop at the seeing level. We can stop at the hearing level. We can stop at the smelling level, tasting level, sensing level, thinking level. And we are not further adding to it. We are not constructing onto it, fabricating onto it. So that is the deep answer we can say. And that is what that we need to try to understand, we need to try to achieve in a way, so that irrespective of whatever the impulse, impingement coming from the outside, mind remain calm. Mind does not lose its stability.
Very good explanation. I got it very well. And it's a long process to remove the mud from the bottle, because the mud has been collected and poured into the bottle over many, many years. Maybe the samsara.
Yeah.
Many, many samsara. So it's a kind of a hard job, but let's try.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you so much, Pate. I really got it very much cleared. And this actually was a problem actually running in my head most of the time, you know, how to suppress or remove these causes. Now, I think I have to work hard for it, and I know how to work hard for it with your guidance and Lokuswadha's guidance. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. And for the next question, I'd like to invite Chitra Devi to please come in.
Thank you. Bhante, just any from that previous question, what I understood from your answer is that we have to look at this effect. If we are able to change our way of reacting, the effect will be different. Would that be fair to say?
So in the sense...
Like for instance, if somebody interrupts you and we react by getting angry, we can prevent that ourselves if we have worked on ourselves.
Yeah.
Would that be correct?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, to the extent that we are developed, we can manage it. We can handle it. Say, for example, with a little disturbance, we can handle when we are somewhat developed. Even for a large disturbance, some higher disturbance, still we can manage if our mind is further developed. So likewise, I mean, say for example, I'll take a simple, there is someone you don't like, And probably you can manage with him. Say he is coming to the front, you are not that agitated, you are not that angry. But assume there is the one who really has done nasty thing to you. But with him you can't still cope up. Still you get angry. So likewise, so there are levels actually we can say. But the point here, important point here is still there is an I, there is a person. So that is where we need to further try to penetrate. So we always try to see a person here. See a I here, experiencer here. So more we develop insights, vipassana, so that part also has to be uprooted. So then only we will have a lasting solution, permanent solution in a way. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to clarify, because from last time you spoke about Namarupa and then you spoke about Vedana Sanya Chetana, which is intention, you said. So that is... it's like a sankara. Would that be right if I said that?
Correct. Chetana, yeah. Chetana is a sankara. Yeah. Yes.
Sankara. Yes. And then pasa manasikara. Now this manasikara, is that the mind or is that the emotion?
Actually, when we use the term mind, it's a kind of an umbrella term which includes everything. Actually,
manasa, is that the manasa?
No, that's what I want to tell you. Now, yeah. if we consider the consciousness, mind, consciousness, chitta and manasa. So those are different levels. Actually, very good clarification is given by Most Venerable Katukurunde Jnananda Mahathero. So he says that consciousness is the more primitive level. Say eye and sight, it may generate eye consciousness. Ear sound generates ear consciousness. So likewise, that is the most primitive level. And once we add something to it, once it becomes colored, once the defilements are mixed, then it becomes the chitta. Then it becomes the chitta. And once we are acting upon impulsively to it, so now we are putting the chetana, the, you know, the impulse, action, then it is called the manasa. So we are the impulsive, reactive part, level, stage is called the manasa, where we are now adding, or we are acting on it. We are maybe thinking, we are say laughing, we are talking, or we are sort of hitting. Likewise, we are now in the action level. So that action, active level is called the manasa. Before that, the colored level is called the chitta. And the most primitive level is the consciousness, vijnana. So therefore, we can't simply say it is the mana. When we ask like that, it's difficult to say. Rather, this consciousness has many aspects.
So, when we are talking of this manasikara, does it include all these things you just now said?
No, actually, manasikara is one property of the mind. And say, for example, Vedana is the feeling part of the mind. Sanya is the perception part, the signs.
Yes.
And Vedana, yes. Sanya, Chetana is the sort of the activity part, the what you say, the kriya, the activity, action part. And then passa is where you kind of a contact. When things are there, they comes together, the contact. Mm-hmm. And manasikara is where you are paying the attention, the whole attention now sort of focused onto a particular phenomena. Say for example, now there are sights, there are sounds, there are smells, there are tastes. So likewise, there are many sort of sense impingements available. But at a given time, assume that you want to see something. At that time, you have to pay attention to that sight. So this paying attention to that selected phenomena is done by the manasikara.
So it's not only the emotions that, I mean, that people get upset, they cry.
No. Emotions.
That's not man.
No, I mean when we say the nama rupa, so they are we are talking of the more fairly the primitive level. It hasn't grown to the emotion level yet. So once it has grown to some extent, the feeling is become more prominent, and it become an emotion.
Right, I understand. Now, also this sense basis, we have the internal and the external, that's correct, the internal other...
Yes.
Our eyes, all those things, and the external is the external objects, right?
Correct.
That's what we call the sense basis, internal and external.
Yes.
And the last clarification is, from what you have been saying today, it's a lot of work outside meditation that we have to do, really, from you know, when we seeing the hearing, all that kind of thing, cognizing, it is all outside meditation that we have to work at. Would that be right if I said that?
No. It is the meditation. So that is where Dhamma Anupassana comes to the picture. Because, I mean...
But in real life, I mean, when we are not sitting on the cushion, I suppose that's a part of meditation, I suppose.
Definitely.
In real life.
Yeah, that's the point. So now there is nothing outside your meditation.
So your
whole life becomes the meditation. It is like you are spreading the meditation, you are spreading the mindfulness throughout your whole life.
So
it is now typically people think, okay, my meditation is the cushion time. Okay, I go sit at 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Okay, that is where I meditate. Everything else is forgotten. But it is not the proper meditation. Your mindful space has to be grown. You are now trying to be mindful while walking. You are now trying to be mindful while eating, while talking, while dealing with another person. So likewise, your mindfulness has to spread throughout your life. Then there is no moment that you are not mindful. So basically the whole life become a kind of an investigation for you to recognize your own mind.
Yes. So we have to live the Dhamma. I mean, every minute we have to live the Dhamma.
Exactly. Yeah. Very true. Yeah.
Yes. But the only thing, Bhante, that is because we have to live in this world. So then, you know, like when you go to work, for instance, you know, you have to change the gear because it's a different gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can't believe the Dhamma then, you know, it's, because we are dealing with people who are not people, who don't think or want to think the Dhamma.
But at the same time, we can't completely forgotten the Dhamma, completely forgotten the practice, even though we are at the office. Because that is where the most vulnerable area, the defilements can attack. So that is where, as you are progressing, you can't expect defilements to happen on the cushion at your home.
No, Bhante, no.
That's the point.
No, but it's easier to handle it in your own home, for instance.
Yeah, that's true.
Because in workplaces, we hear very often how people get steamrolled over if you are going to be very mild and gentle and whatever, you know, people just walk over you. So you have to balance that. That's what I was trying to say. You have to make a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that also is true. That that sometimes actually people sort of misuse.
Yes.
Yeah, that I agree.
Yes. Yeah. So you have to put a little resistance somehow or question certain things and things which you may not do with Kalyana Mitra and home situation or whatever. So I am very conscious of it, and I always feel that sometimes, you know, we have to balance.
Yeah.
We have to balance.
Correct.
You know?
So I like to point out here a very good example given by Achan Cha. So actually his student monks are telling that whenever Achan Cha has to perform a task, that he has to assume that he's the senior monk, he's the teacher, and he has to take that leading role. So at that time, so he takes that leading role. So he do the orders and he himself are working properly and he does the proper management, administration, and he plays as a person. He shows a personality. You know, when we are talking as that some person has a personality, so that has an influence. So he has the ordering kind of a situation that he has a good personality. So once the job is done, again, he's the typical normal monk. So that
yes,
that
yes,
sort
yes.
of role playing is there. So when you are at home, you may have to play a role of your mother as a mother. So that is that you are playing properly. And say once you are at the office, you assume that you are doing some administrative task. So then you have to play that administrative role.
Yes.
But the point here is that we should not assume that. I hope you got the point. Now,
what do you mean we should not assume that? What was that?
Yeah, that's the point. What I want to communicate is that assume that you are an administrator. Okay, now you are playing that role while at the office. So assume now you are coming back home by driving the car. While doing that, are you an administrator?
No.
All right, that's the point. So we should not take that administrator role back home.
No. I totally get that point, Bhante. But it's much easier to be able to practice Dhamma, live the Dhamma in your own personal surroundings, you know.
Yeah. So what happens?
What
happened to us is typically we are playing a role at many different levels, many different stages, but we are using or taking that role to other places as well. Assume that you are a doctor, you are an engineer, and while at home also you feel that I want my family members to consider me like an engineer, as an administrator, as a doctor. They have to give me due respect. My children has to respect me as an engineer, as a doctor, as an administrator. So this is something unnecessary. This is where we have to live a kind of an unassumed life, if possible. I mean, what I am talking is quite difficult, and I am not yet capable for doing that. But we need to try that. There may be roles that we need to play. But once the role is finished, so are we able to come back to that simplicity? Are we able to simply be with our children with a very, you know, with a smile, with a mild heart, with a soft heart, just to be with their level, with a have a good smile with them? You know, we have to completely drop that administrative role in order to do that.
Yes.
So that
yes,
is
one thing.
Yeah. So that is where we need to be quite careful, and that kind of a switching of the roles. Is in a way we knowingly we can say. I mean, typically what happens is unknowingly we become driven by the role. We are in the role. We don't know it is a role. But if we knowingly play the role, knowing that it is a very temporary role, I am just playing it for the sake of doing it, of sake of completeness. Or success. But once that role is over, I become no one in a way.
Yes, Bhante.
Yes.
Yes, got it, Bhante. Thank you. That's why the Buddha said it's against the grain, it's against the flow. So we have to sometimes not forget that.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you, Bhante. That is all for today's questions.
Yeah. Okay, then actually we have spent almost 1.5 hours and you all have actively participated, and we also was able to discuss something beautiful. And with respect to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, and again we have accumulated some merits by discussing this Dhamma. And let's recite the traditional verses and share the merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු